Hello, Playdate. This is Don.
This is Nick.
And I'm Ryan.
This week, we are covering Playdate news.
Recent indie releases.
And skibbity-doo bopping into our 52nd episode, even though we don't number them anymore.
We numbered the last several, but thank you for listening. Let's get started. Ryan has like 9.5 pages of news here.
We better get going then.
Nick and I are going to be playing Battleship in another window while Ryan does this.
All right. So I'll see you guys in about 30 minutes, but that means it's time for the news and notes. So starting off with some real positive info, Deimos Games left some very kind words for us on Twitter. He says about the Hello Playdate podcast, another great episode of at Hello Playdate podcast. Thanks for covering Playtest Spina, best place for Playdate updates and game news. He must not look for game news and Playdate news anywhere else. But thank you so much, Deimos Games. That was very, very kind of you. We'll leave a link to that in the show notes for today's episode. Awfully cool. Do you guys have warm fuzzies you want to talk about regarding that?
Thank you for the feedback. It's a fun game. Rate and review our podcast on wherever you listen to it. We don't ever say that. So,
all right.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Indeed. Thanks. So that brings us to our next bullet point in the news and notes, which is the fact that Panic is celebrating a year of catalog with a sale. This, let's see, what is this? We're recording on Tuesday. This Thursday, the sale is going to end. It's from March 7th to 14th, 2024, in case you're listening to this in the far-flung future. We've got a link to that in the show notes as well, so you can hop over there and purchase games up to many percentages off. I've already purchased several. I think I grabbed about half a dozen of them. Have you guys been partaking in this sale, folks?
Nick, do you grab anything?
Of course. Yeah. I rebought a whole bunch of stuff that I bought on Itch because that's I have low way. Impulse control. That's right. Yes. I wanted to highlight that our very own Don wrote up a great article and posted it. And so I've included that in the links here in this section.
Thank you. That article will be useful for one more day after posting this episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I bought 4 games. Tempted to buy one more. But most of them I already had because we've been doing this podcast for about the entire year. What'd you get, Ryan? I got Hermit, Under the Tree, Halfway to Dawn, and Heidi Spot.
Interesting. I nabbed a game I have been meaning to buy since the dawn of time. It's called A Balanced Brew. Just played my first game on it today. Was real fun. Got stuck on level 11 or something. It's one of these like 45 degree angle hill things. Anyway, I'm sure I'll get past it after another 97 attempts. But I also got a game called Possessions and Quest for the X, as well as for, what is that game you told me to buy, Don? For something?
For track.
Mm-hmm. And the last game I purchased, we'll be talking about this at the very end of the episode. Foreshadowing, teaser, stick around for the cliffhanger. I'll tell you about that last purchase.
Speaking of foreshadowing, though, if you want to play along with the Pick of the Week Club, buy 4Track because it'll be a Pick of the Week soon.
Good call. Thank you for that, Don.
If you want to save $2.
Everybody, get on that $2 savings while you can for the next 36 hours or so. All right. Nick, what did you purchase? What did you repurchase during the catalog sale before we move on?
A bunch of stuff, and I forgot specific titles. All right,
fantastic.
Let's go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Panic also reports good times were had at the OMSI event. That is the Oregon Museum of Science Industry, I think. We reported on that last time, and that was the first time that Playdates were available to purchase in person. Not only this, but Playdate developer James Gameboy showed off his in-development Playdate game called Initial Dream at a separate booth.
Initial Daydream.
What did I say?
Initial Dream.
I said that?
You did.
Don's shaking his head.
I heard Daydream, but maybe my brain fit the day in there because I knew that was the title.
Well, we know there's no editing in this podcast, so we'll find out, won't we? Anyway.
You can take the reins, Ryan, whenever you want. Nick's mic issues last week were edit heavy.
Oh, wow.
Legendary.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yikes. All right. Well, good luck again this week, Don. In the meantime, Panic gave good old James Game Boy a shout out, as the kids say, on the tweeters. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes of today's episode, as well as an initial Daydream itch page link too. So I just wanted to follow up the old report that we had last week.
James Game Boy also released the soundtrack for Initial Daydream.
Hey, hey.
It's available to stream right now.
I think that brings us to the next somewhat significant update. Are you guys ready for this? Playdate had an update, numero cinco, that's five for folks who don't know. So I thought I'd give sort of a little rundown for those who weren't able to watch this. We'll have a link in the show notes of today's episode. It's not very long. It's about 12 or 13 minutes or so. And I'll see if I can wrap this up in less time than that. Let's see. We had Krista welcoming us, Krista Mergen, who is the one who puts all these things together. She is the producer behind the official Playdate podcast, and she also does the videos for them. So after Krista, Cable came on, Cable Sasser, and reiterated that Playdates were available. He was very excited about this, and essentially he said, pending any unforeseen massive influx of orders, they should have them available to ship within a day or two. So that's real exciting news. I know we've heard that before, but I think Cable wanted to come on and mention that. That was followed up by Arissa, who invited a few developers to highlight their games, starting with Robot, R-O-W-B-O-T. It looked real fun, like a robot rowing game. Midnight Raider. This looked really ambitious, like a just silky smooth platformer with interesting crank integration. Like you can pick up a crank in the game and like move it over to a location where it's supposed to be used. And then once you drop it, then you can crank the crank. Looked pretty fun. Another game they mentioned was The Scrolling Enigma. That's a puzzler game. There's two new games from RNG Party Games. Now, Nick, you might want to start paying attention at this point because these are the developers of Bloom, and they've got a couple games. The first one, Echoes of the Emergent. They are billing this as a kinetic visual novel for the Playdate, which should be coming in spring. So I believe that's the one that's coming up soonest.
That's Nick? Very exciting.
Hey, yep. Here's Nick. Nick is on the podcast. Welcome, Nick. Good to have you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And welcome to My Neighbor's Music, which is louder than ever.
I still don't hear it. Oh, well. The second game coming from RNG Party Games is For Home. They said that one has no timeline for when it's coming out, but they are hard at work making it one of the biggest RPG games on the Playdate. All right. Big words, RNG Party Games. Following that, Escape from the Arcade. We've chatted about this before, but Don, I know you're the one who brought this up a number of times. Did you know that this was created by a married couple, like in the evenings after putting their kids to bed? Evidently, the wife is doing the like the art, and is it the music also? And then the husband is doing the programming. It just seemed like such a cool collaboration. I know we've mentioned this on the show before, but it sounds like it's coming to catalog in a more fully realized form. Don, did you have any thoughts on that?
No, I knew it was a couple, but I didn't know their marital status. But that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Looks like the next one is called Diora, D-I-O-R-A. It's like an isometric platformer puzzler type game. It looked really interesting. Kind of gave me some like I'm gonna say Marble Madness vibes because of the isometric nature of it, but it's not very Marble Madness-y probably. Next one was called Spore Story from possibly Axolotl. Shadowgate PD, which we've heard about in development from Pixel Ghost, Comet, which is this incredible looking RPG. If you are on any of the Discords, you've probably heard of GovBubs or Donald Fraser working on this just beautiful looking game. I think we're all wish listing that real hard right now. Also, new stuff from Scenic Route Software called The Whiteout. So this game is made with the Post Hero engine, which means it's sort of like a point-and-click adventure, but it has a wildly different tone from Post Hero. It looks very dark, very gritty, very, like, you know, sort of PG-13 slash adult or so. Anyhow, Scenic Route Software has been putting out previews of this game on the social meds, and I would suggest you go check that out if you're not going to go take a look at this Playdate number 5 update, which I'm talking about. Also,
I'm very excited for that one. I cannot wait. And he's posted some engine improvements, particularly moving up. Now you can see the rear of your character, that all-important aspect that we've all been waiting for.
He incorporated the butt sprite. Thank you, Nick, for making that happen. Awesome.
Thanks, Senior Crowd Software. Yeah. So looking forward to it.
While Nick is making an interjection, I'd like to make an interjection that it's Robot Rally. I was over here searching for a game called Robot, and yeah, by Ray, Robot Rally.
Oh,
which
good
there's
golly.
A demo on itch right now.
Thank you for saving me from the corrections next episode, Don. I appreciate that.
No problem.
And my apologies to the developer. After Whiteout, there was Solar Descent. It looks like kind of a pulpy RPG type of game. Then we've got Island 2 coming out from Ron Lent. Then What the Crow? It's like a 2D side-scrolling, it sort of gave me like Untitled Goose Games vibe, like you're a little crow and you're kind of interacting with, you know, stuff in the environment causing general mischief. After that, there was a game called Void Blazers. It's like a vertical scrolling spaceship shoot 'em up type game. Then Far Away Fairway. That's that procedurally generated golf game that's been teased for a while. And I guess it has, you know, very many, many, many different courses because it's procedurally generated. Then the big kahuna was Mars After Midnight. That dropped the day of the trailer. So you can go get that right now if you want. Lots of wacky looking monsters in there. I'm still not sure exactly what it's about even after watching the trailer. I guess you're like helping aliens or something. Don, I saw that you tossed this on the old indie inventory. Did you get any better sense of this than I did?
Yeah, I played it a bit today.
Ooh.
Came out today at $6 by Lucas Pope. And you are a bouncer at, I don't know, I guess like a community center because you can hold different events there. But the one I did was a Cyclops anger management group the first night. And so you can only let Cyclopses in. So if anybody came to your door with more than one eye, you had to just shut the door in their face. And so use the crank to open up the little peephole and then you close it. So if they do have one eye, I was pushing the button to open the door. They would come in and then they would have refreshments and then go into the meeting. So you're also responsible for assorting the refreshments and cleaning the table. And then you hear a knock at the door, you go back to the door. So it's a little bit of Papers, Please. Somebody, I don't know who it was, I'm sorry, in our Discord said it was like Papers, Please meets Diner Dash. I think it was Jug Puncher, actually, that said that. And I would agree, it is not super frantic yet, which was I'm thankful for. There was no timer or like stress environment yet on the first night. But it was really, really slick and fun. The music was great. Graphics are great. A lot of personality. Every monster looked different. And you have to like look up and down in the peephole to see if maybe an orifice on their body winks. Like maybe that's a second eyeball. It's very creative. So that's highly fun. Recommend. For $6, I thought it was going to be like $15. I was shocked it was $6. So highly recommend.
Wow. That's great. That's great. Yep. Cool. Let's see. So I think that was it as far as the new game trailers that was in the Playdate update number 5. After all those games were mentioned, they also mentioned the catalog anniversary sale, which we've already touched on, and the Playdate Community Awards, which we're going to be talking about here as well. I don't know. What are you thinking, Don? Is that our segue into discussing the Playdate Community Awards? Do you want to talk about that now or in a little bit?
Yeah, we can do it now.
All right, let's make it happen. Silky smooth.
For segue. you guys, Nick and Ryan, you can see I've got a link a little bit further down. On the Playdate Wiki, it's already been updated for the Playdate Community Awards. So I'll put a link in the show notes. If you haven't checked out the Playdate Wiki, it's a really cool resource that is fan updated with all the winners and whatnot. And also, speaking of the Playdate sale, catalog sale we were talking about, there's a Community Awards section of the catalog store right now that has cool. All the winners categorized by who the nominees were and the winners in each category. And you can click on those, and a bunch of them are on sale. So if you just want to see the best arcade game, you can just click on that tab, see the four games that were nominated, and go from there. Odds are at least one of them will be on sale right now. Let me find the correct link and we can chat about that. Did you guys watch the award show? It was about 35 minutes long.
I did not have a chance to watch that one. I put my focus on the Playdate update number 5 and then was really going to lean on you heavily for for the awards.
I did watch it, but I had no audio, so I cranked it to 2x speed and just watch it with the subtitles. Yep.
That's right. There are quite a few.
We should do it. Wait, hold on, Don. You know what we should do? We should have Nick do the update. Let's have Nick tell us all about the Playdate Awards. I want to know what he got out of it from silent 2x viewing. Okay, Nick.
Congratulations to all the winners.
Oh.
And it was quite a show. And that's about all I remember. Thank you.
It was the best of times and equally best of times.
Yeah, I'll have to look at the show notes to remind myself. But that was like a week ago, wasn't it?
It was
a while ago.
4 days ago.
That's a week in Nick time.
Nick is rapidly hitting his mute button, as you can see, because his neighbor is blasting Liberian death metal in the background or something like that. Anyway, these were voted on by a group of judges, and community was able to nominate community heroes, so we'll go over that in a second. But some of the categories, I don't know if we need to go over them all, but there were categories like sound design, visual achievements, launch experiences, like when you click the little card, what the card does before the game launches, which is kind of neat. Realistic fishing was the sweetheart of the year, is that one, that launch experience. But another one that popped up a lot was Castle Tintagel, Gun Trails. What am I trying to think? Resident Tail popped up a lot. There wasn't quite the Four Horsemen we had last year where it was like the same four games in every category. There was a lot more variety this year, but there were a couple that popped up quite a bit.
There were about a million games that came out in the past year. Yeah. It was astounding. Again, we say this all the time. We've got such an embarrassment of riches on this platform.
Mm-hmm. Most anticipated game, the winner was Mars After Midnight.
Mm.
So this didn't take much.
Riddle me this, Don. I'm looking at this Playdate Wiki, and I see the categories, best soundtrack, sound design, etc. And then I'm interpreting this little trophy as the winner. Mm-hmm. What does the red text mean?
I think red is they don't have a wiki page. So if they're yellow, they have a wiki, Playdate Community Wiki page with more information. It's red,
so
they
it's
don't
like,
have one yet.
It's like the red text of shame. You need to go get a wiki page for yourself, right? You
need to set up a page. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Which is crazy. Root Bear doesn't have one.
Root Bear, Mars After Midnight are two winners that don't have a wiki page. Well, congratulations to everyone, not only on winning, but also getting nominated, and all the devs for making all this glorious gaming for us. Don, did you want to highlight any of these that you feel particularly strongly about?
Sure. I was one of the judges in, what was it? The general category. So all the like best adventure game, best puzzle game, all those categories, the Cranky Award and the Game of the Year awards.
The
I think there are eight
are those the things
judges.
under the genre awards? Is that what you're saying?
Yes,
Okay.
genre and the general awards.
And general. Okay.
And for the most part, we all got along fine. I won't, I'm not gonna have
Oh
any
yeah.
trauma or anything.
There you
I
go.
think
Air some laundry, Don.
there are only a couple that we butted heads with. Or no, we didn't butt heads, but we had lengthy conversations about. But I was pushing hard to get Carve Jr. in the best arcade game category, and it didn't quite make it, but I pled my case. Another one was getting Root Beer in the Game of the Year category, but it got there. And I'm glad it
Root
did.
Beer.
Root Beer, yeah. So Game of the Year was, let's see. I know what it is, but what were the nominees? Where is it?
Shall I say it? Nominees were
Yeah, if you
Gun
see it, oh, it's at the
Trails,
bottom. Yeah, go ahead.
Resonant Tail, Root Beer, and Don, you want to regale us with the winner?
And the winner was Realistic Fishing.
Hey,
Yeah.
congrats, Toad. Yes.
Yes, totally out of control. Under control?
Under control. Yeah.
Under control. Thank you.
Something controlling.
Yes. So a lot of these games you can hear about on our past episodes, but there's quite a few here we haven't covered yet, which is really cool. So
Yeah.
maybe we'll get to them. But anyway, there'll be a link in the show notes to the full list. And like I said, there's links to most of these, or you can watch the presentation, which I really encourage you to do because it's only 35 minutes and there are several trailers for upcoming games in the awards, just like the Game Awards.
And if you
And
18 exit on mute, you might even get something out of it.
I was going to say it's an awful lot of work to put something like that together. Obviously, it's coordinated with a bunch of different individuals, like Don, as a judge. So, congratulations to everybody. It really is amazing, and this platform proves itself to be very community-minded, and I really appreciate that about it. And congratulations to, I think I said this twice now, but the third time, congratulations to all the winners and all the nominees, and to all of us for being able to enjoy this amazing gaming cornucopia.
Indeed. Let's give a special shout out to the community heroes. These are people that did a lot in the Playdate community. These names are going to be familiar to everyone who's listened to the show because they're people that constantly show up and make the Playdate community something special, which a lot of gaming communities are very toxic and hard to penetrate. But the Playdate community has been the opposite of that. Very welcoming and healthy and vibrant. So six people were, well, lots of people were nominated, but six were universally nominated and rose to the top or whatever. And those were Gant, the shining star in our community. He does Tiny Yellow Machine, put together things like the awards, but also the quarterly Playdate Directs and streaming and interviews and all sorts of stuff on his YouTube channel. Next up was Gingerbeard Man, also known as Matt Sefton, known as the quiet dad in the Playdate community, it says. Yeah, he's always active in the Discord channels and all over the forums and whatnot. So his programming skills are widely known.
Hey, by the way, since we've got Gingerbeard Man being mentioned right now, I thought I'd also toss this out to anybody who knows of he was looking for like a meditation retreat in Japan. I saw him post this on I think it was Twitter, and just sort of tossing it out there, seeing if anybody knows about this. So anyway, I thought I would amplify that request for Matt Sefton. If you know of any meditation retreats in Japan, hey, hit us up on the Discord, tag Gingerbeard Man if you can.
The next one was Totally, who is a constant delight in the community. So yeah, he's all over the place too, and made Game of the Year. So congratulations there. Ray is like surly, yeah, encyclopedic knowledge, has encyclopedic encyclopedic knowledge of the playdate, but is also like always surly and has a very noticeable personality. A lot of fun. So everybody's friend is Ray. Then Zanya Lasagna, of course, if you've listened to the show, you know Zanya Lasagna.
Huzzah! But,
one of the comments, the Nick Fury of the Playdate community, Zanya has pulled together everybody to make the Playdate calendar, the magazine, all the these bundles. Different apps, bundles, just a million different things, a dev Discord channel.
Her own games on top of all of that.
Yeah. And then the games she releases just keep getting better and better and better. And it's really cool to see Zanya's skills grow as her art gets better. Like, just everything. I mean, her art was already good from the start, but just getting more and more prolific. While she's saving animals at the same time is just amazing. So, of course, we love Zanya here. And then
the only thing I have to say beyond that is, panic, when are you going to hire Zanya? That's all I want to know.
And then finally, RP Dev, an accomplished developer, but a passionate advocate for shared growth. So they've released multiple tools, including the Playdate Mode 7 library, and constantly providing support and assistance. So anyway, shout out to those folks. Okay.
That is so cool. Nice work for putting all this together, Dawn, and all the judges for the Playdate Community Awards, as Nick mentioned. What a mountain of work you guys put into this. Thank you for doing this.
I did almost nothing, but all the credit goes to those guys, GovBubs and Gant and everybody else involved. Yeah, very cool. And then Ryan, you had Scenic Route Software posted this Twitter thread about Playdate pricing, which yes, I did indeed. See. Like, I never go on Twitter, but I saw this somewhere. I'm glad you cross-posted this.
I think he's been posting this on not just Twitter, but before we get into that, I want to also mention that Alistair Lowe has a Kickstarter going right now for a game called Flea 2. Now, we'll have a link in the show notes. This is an NES game, but there's a potential Playdate port coming for it, assuming the stretch goal is reached. So it's not completely out of the Playdate ballpark. We've got a Playdate developer in Alistair Lowe and a potential port to the Playdate. So I wanted to send some eyes that way. It looks like an incredible project. So anyhow, if you're interested in Alistair Lowe games in any form or fashion, why don't you hop over there to our show notes? That'll take you to the Kickstarter page. All right. So with that said, Don mentioned Scenic Route Software's thoughts on pricing. And I actually reached out to Mr. Route and said, hey, I couldn't help but notice that this came out real close to when there was a particular game discussed on this show. And I had a thought or two on its price. And it wasn't to say that the price was outrageous. My thoughts were simply that for me, the game felt repetitive and like not a game I would spend a whole lot of time on. And consequently, I would like to not pay that much for it. I don't think it's an unreasonable price for the game. Just wasn't a Ryan game. But honestly, I was a little trepidatious that maybe I caused this piece of writing that Scenic Route Software wrote here that I'm about to read to you. He assured me it was not anything I said on the show, that there was a lot more toxic comments going on far elsewhere on the internet. Not
everything is about you. Is that what he said?
He did not say those words, and I'm not going to say them either. But Scenic Route Software did say these words. He said, I've been seeing... these are the words of Mr. Route. I'm about to start quoting. He says, I've been seeing the cost of Playdate games come up again here and there, and if you'll humor me, I'd like to make a few points. He goes on to make a few Twitter posts, which go on to say, there is not a single Playdate game that is going to serve you an unskippable ad in between every level or offer to show you an ad in exchange for one more go. There are no Playdate games designed around in-app purchases. Not once will you have the option to speed up an in-game event in exchange for real-world money or spend your actual money on a cosmetic upgrade to your character. No Playdate game has the ability to track you or sell your information to third parties. All of the poopy things, there's a different word there, but let's keep this all ages. All of those types of things that games on mobile platforms do to make money on titles that cost little to nothing are not possible on the Playdate. The only way to monetize a Playdate game is through an upfront one-time cost to a very small audience. And that's a good thing. So I wanted to bring this up, not to beat a dead horse, but because I thought he brought up some really salient, intelligent points that I wanted to amplify first and foremost. And secondly, see if there were any points of discussion from either of you, Don or Nick.
You want to get into this again?
Let's fight.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. Mobile games are cheap because of scraping information and advertising and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Plus there's an audience in the hundreds of millions, if not billions of, well, I mean, there's billions of Android users and billions of iPhone users. Probably. So
I don't know. The audience is bunch smaller. Okay.
Yeah.
We're making Don uncomfortable, but I did want to take a minute. I did want to take a minute to amplify these words from Scenic Route Software. I think they deserve a wider audience. And so for the two listeners that we have, I hope you now hear this and understand it. Scenic Route Software, thank you for everything you do and for making these very sound points and being a part of our community.
We mentioned Mars After Midnight is out. Go buy it now. We mentioned Mars After Midnight is out. You want to go buy it right now. It's very good. It's on the catalog store. It's the only thing that came out this week, so you can't miss it. It's that and then the sale, which is the entire front page. Next up, I really thinned out the herd this week. There must have been some game jams going because there's just a million demos up, and I typically don't mention them. So I'm not. This week, I'm not. Instead of having 50 games, we got like 7. Next one is The Infiltration of Nick Sterling. It's free. It's by Diogo and Raid. And this is the one game I put on here that I have not played, I think. But this looks like a really cool Nick game. It's like this futuristic looking adventure game. You're a cat burglar, freedom fighter thing. It's got really nice graphics. It's made in Lua from scratch. It's some sort of fighting but also surveillance, like it's one of those things where there's like a security beam that you're trying to dodge out of the way and stuff. I don't know, it looks cool, it's free, just go check it out.
Yeah, I pulled a Nick on this one. I have downloaded and have not played, but it looks like, I don't know, like sort of pulpy but with like really incredible cutscenes. I'm interested to give this a whirl. I was too busy playing our game of the week. But look forward to giving this a try.
Game of the week was crazy demanding this time. So it was hard to like play 20 minutes of every other game. Next up is Warp Defender by Ox72. This one, you're like flying down a tunnel. Nick, you got to help me. What is the guy with the backpack, the Sega game?
Oh, Space Harrier?
Space Harrier. Thank you. It plays like Space Harrier. But it's difficult because you use the crank to accelerate, but you have to like push A to shoot, but use the D-pad to move. So you need a third arm basically. So the best way I can figure out how to play this is like crank it up as fast as you can when you start and then just like haul ass shooting stuff and try not to die so you can get through stages really quick. Because there is an end to the stages and they're very short if you're going as fast as possible and just happen to not die. It's pretty fun. Anyway, right now it's $2. It was cheap earlier this week. So if you see these games and they look cool, hop on them. But right now it's $2. And then from Dia Damage is Road Trex. And this is Tetris, but everything goes to the center of the plate, center of the screen. Downloaded, but haven't played. It's name your own price. It looks weird. It looks like a very weird block matching Tetris-y game thing. with a lot of features. So looks like it could be a lot of fun. Download it, haven't played. And then finally from me is a game called The Bomb Disarmament. This one, you're disarming a bomb. I noticed that the comments were in Portuguese, and a quick way to get mentioned here is to do stuff in Portuguese. So I messaged the dev, and they are in Portugal. So this one, you're cranking to like match little ticks on a bomb, and you have to do it very quickly, and you have to do it 120 times to disarm the bomb. And eventually the ticks will have A's or B's on them. So it's kind of like a really fast bop it. And if you miss one, you die. So there's a timer counting down, and you're very quickly. Remember that thing at the Pinball Hall of Fame where you're like trying to crack the safe super fast? Do you guys ever do that?
Yeah.
So the three people in our audience that know what I'm talking about. It's very, very, very fast safe cracking game. But it was pretty fun. And it is name your own price. And you get a certificate either of incompetence if you lose, or expertness if you win. So
that's fantastic.
Yes.
And that is not the end of the list. We've got another one that I'm very proud of myself this week. I played a game in the inventory, and this one's called Lock Spinner by Lock Spinner, evidently. Lock Spinner is
by Scribe. By
who now?
Scribe.
Scribe? Where is that? I believe you. Lock Spinner is an
experiment.
How to read. Thank you. Lock Spinner is an experimental sound-based game in which you need to tilt and rotate your playdate to unlock the level. I played this thing, very interesting concept, but feels like it's very much in beta mode right now. I'm hoping that they continue developing this because it's such a cool game. So basically, the first level, you have this like single axis that you're trying to hit. And then if you accomplish that, then you can go on to level two. And then there's two axes. You're trying to, you know, use the playdate's accelerometer to get in that range. And this is the best part. It boops at you when you do the right thing. So that happens a couple of different ways. And then on the third level, if you get both axes correct, boop, boop, then you have to crank the crank to the appropriate, you know, angle. And when you get all three of those in alignment, evidently you win. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do number two. I did number one, but basically the screen goes blank. The screen is black while you're playing. So there's no like visual cues or feedback or anything. And that's the part I wish was a little more developed. Like, am I even close? Like, I'm rotating this thing around, and for quite a lot of it, I'm not sure if I'm anywhere in the range, or like I've rotated at 360 degrees and I'm still not hearing anything. So I feel like there's some user friendliness to massage into it still, but super cool concept. Again, name your own price. Hard to go wrong there, but yeah, give it a try. It's called Lock Spinner by someone that Nick and Don know.
Scribe.
Thank you. Oh, there it is. I see the words. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, it sounds cool. This makes me think, like, if they did make a Playdate 2, which there's no indication that they're going to, instead of the backlit color screen that would make it like every other console, if they just put like a haptic feedback thing in there, like if it had a little bit of a vibration to it, I could see that being an allowance they would make.
Little
battery killer.
Little motor in there, huh?
Yeah, it's a motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about the color screen, but it sure would be nice to have backlit, because typically the only time
Ryan.
Yes. Don't yuck my yum here, Don. The only time I typically have
to
play games
to have for a Playdate podcast
are nighttime hours, like right before bed, and I can't play my Playdate then. Anyway.
What was the early thing? Like get a lamp or something? Wasn't that the early?
Yeah. We'll get you a lamp, Ryan. It's okay.
Yeah. So anyway, daylight hours for now.
Okay. Well, with that, I think that closes out into the inventory and brings us to
boop
pick of the week. And this week it is my pick, and I chose Under the Castle, which was made by Danny Diaz, Z Corbs, and Volcano Bites. And Under the Castle is a classic rogue game, as it's described on the catalog page, where you explore infinite dungeons, vanquishing enemies, gathering orbs of light, and rescuing enslaved villagers. Use your weapons, potions, magic scrolls, and even your own hat to navigate the treacherous depths and find your way to the evil lord. So, I have plenty of thoughts about this game and enjoyed playing it, but Don and Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Ryan, you want to go for it?
Yeah, sure. So this game took me an embarrassing amount of time to get into and to learn. I will preface all this by saying that I am now having a difficult time putting the game down because I like it so much. But for anyone getting into this game initially, I feel like there's not a ton of in-game instruction. Like I felt like I had a lot of questions going into it and wasn't completely sure of how to best play, but then these play mechanics started to make themselves known to me after playing for, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes or something. It really took me a while. And, but with that said, there's a lot of different, swords and shields and magical potions and different things that you can get in these dungeons and then retrieve them and use them in each dungeon you go into. There's three different types of, goals you're trying to achieve. One, you're trying to defeat a particular number of monsters. In another area, you're trying to defeat a particular you're trying to collect a particular number of orbs. The third area, you're trying to save a particular number of villagers. These numbers of things you're trying to achieve start increasing as you achieve these goals. And once you've reached seven for each one of those three areas, like done those seven tasks, then you're allowed into the castle to defeat the big baddie. These various dungeons, I'll call them, I think they're called the mine and the sewer and the something. I forget what they actually call them. But these three dungeon areas I was mentioning where you collect these killed monsters, villagers, or orbs, it starts to become a really interesting risk reward in terms of inventory choice. And I found myself really interested in that. And it sort of gave me like nods to Inventory Hero, because I kept thinking like, oh, what am I going to save? What am I going to use? What am I going to toss off? And it's not, you don't have to think that quickly, because the turn-based elements make it so that you can kind of sit there and think like, okay, I'm going to make a move, but then my enemies are going to move also. So you can kind of sit and strategize, which I really liked. It didn't feel too frantic to me. So once I got into it, once I understood the mechanics and started developing some strategies around it, man, I really dug it. I ended up completing the entire game and going further than just completion. So I'll be really interested to hear what you guys think. So my TLDR is, took me a while to get into it, longer than I expected, but boy howdy, do I ever like it now. Don, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this was on my top 10 for last year, and I like roguelikes, so I appreciate a gameplay loop like this. I like that you can enter the, whatever it is, the sewer, the dungeon, and the other thing, whenever you want, and they have slightly different goals. So you play slightly different, and it seems like the strategy is slight, it changes just a little bit. Like the orb thing, throwing your inventory off, was pretty neat. Having to defeat X amount of enemies over and over and over makes you change your build a little bit, make you more powerful.
That orb thing obliterates your inventory. You really got to be on your toes on that.
Once you get up to five, it's like, right on. What's left in my pouch? Because you only carry eight things.
Yeah. And I'm up to I a really level where you have to collect 12 and you only have 8 inventory spots.
I'm curious how that works. I did not get up to anything like that.
We can talk about that if you want.
Yeah. At first I hated the text size, but after a while, I guess I got used to it because it didn't bother me at a certain point. Whereas other games still bother me, the text size. So a lot of it is really thoughtfully done. Of course, the graphics are great and whatnot, but I don't know if I just didn't notice it on the early levels, but there were secret passages I started finding after a while. And then I wondered, oh, have I been missing these the whole time, or did they just start showing up? Which is a really nice surprise when I just happened into them, because there are tells and I recognize the tells at a certain point, but then it just made me like second guess myself. And then there were little things that I thought were tells, like little sparkles here or there. And then I couldn't really get anything out of them. But it was like this air of mystery and discovery that kept me wondering, like, oh, well, what's next? Like, what am I missing? Which was pretty cool for, like, what's a pretty small gameplay loop, really? Like, there's not that much to it. You are collecting, 30 items. And you can load out, I guess, up to 8 when you're entering the crypt. So they can be spells or swords or shields or potions. And you know, that changes your strategy. I got a little annoyed at like how similar some of the stuff looks. And my number one biggest complaint that I think would have really boosted my enjoyment of the game is if you could just stand over an item and it would tell you what it is. That drove me bonkers, especially with loadout. I'm like, I don't remember which slot the thief shield is in or whatever. Like at a certain, so that all that did is it made me like pick the same 4 items almost all the time, unless I really wanted a certain kind of spell or a certain kind of sword, or I felt like a certain shield was going to give me the buff I needed. Because then you're constantly picking up stuff, go into your menu, read what it does, go back out, put it down, walk over to the next thing. And in the dungeons, you do that too, because somebody will drop something. But if your inventory is full, you're like, okay, well, let me drop something, walk over, see what it is. I feel like that could have all been done away with if you just stood over something and a window popped up.
A little hover text or something. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's a minor complaint, but it adds up over time. Mm-hmm. And it definitely felt like it slowed down my gameplay. And that made this a hard game to do for Game of the Week. Like, as much as I like this type of game, it's like, how do you, I mean, Ryan did it, but how do you like blitz through a roguelike in 2 weeks? I found myself having a hard time with that, because if I had if I hit a level that was difficult for me to pass, it wasn't like, oh, if I just spend enough time, I'm going to keep going. It's like, well, at a certain point, I'm just not good enough to seal the deal on some of these for whatever reason. And my strategy definitely, my gameplay strategy changed. Like, I didn't realize the B button let you hop for a long time. Not until we were playing it this week. Like, the whole last year or whatever, the last 3 months I've been playing it, I never noticed that.
Okay, taught me something. Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah. Be quiet. Both
you
of
push
you?
B and you hop, and so that makes everything move.
Yes.
I always just walk into a wall over and over.
Yes. Yes, yes. Okay.
So now then I accidentally hop, that would screw me. And I think that's what was happening the last few months, and I just didn't really understand it.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it's very useful when you know that it's available.
I feel like this is Dawn's Minesweeper.
Yes.
What is your what's your overall thought, Dawn? Is this a must play? Is this
I feel like it's not a must play in a 2 week period, but it's definitely a chip away at for a year or whatever. I mean, it's a very good pick up and play game, and you don't have to power through it.
All right. I'll let listeners in on a little secret about Nick here. And that is that I budget about 2 hours of time once every 2 weeks to play any kind of game.
That's a secret.
Yes. Maybe less if the game is smaller, But in this case, it took up all of the 2 hours. And this game is a fantastic mix, I think, of a mystery dungeon game mixed with elements of Rogue. I wouldn't go so far as to call it similar to Rogue, really. Because even permadeath doesn't exactly exist, but the dungeon layouts are randomized. And so if you find yourself getting stuck, and the enemy placement and types are randomized as well. So if you find yourself getting stuck on one particular one, it may not come down to skill necessarily. You just might have gotten random number generated out of a winning run.
I'm not so sure I completely agree with that statement that levels and enemies are randomly generated. You're right that as you progress down through the levels, you don't know quite which one you're going to find, what floor plan you're going to find for that level of the dungeon. But there's like, after you play it a while, maybe longer than 2 hours, there's a certain number of floor plans and you start to recognize them over and over again. So these floor plans are not necessarily randomized. And once you start seeing them and recognizing them, you're like, oh yeah, there's that secret passage I can go to, or, oh, here's the one where all that exists is a treasure chest that I can bust into and I don't have to worry about enemies in this one. Or, oh, here's where that little plant fan looking guy is, and he's in the same place he was before. So I'm not sure.
So randomized doesn't necessarily mean procedurally generated, which I think might be how you're taking it. They're shuffled. Like floor 7 is not always the single treasure chest floating in space area. So randomized meaning, yes, they are not always the same layout every time that you go into it. So, pushback. I would also say, as far as weapons and shields and so forth go, I thought there was a nice variety at first of weapons and shields, I did find that the combat system really didn't reward as much experimentation as I thought that it would. Meaning, starting with a bigger initial damage number is much more beneficial than anything else, pretty much. So there's a weapon which is +5, and it's 5 to 5, but your crit chance is still available. So frequently, pretty frequently for a critical hit, I thought you wind up, doing 10 damage instead of 5. And part of that is due to your armor choice. If I recall correctly, the shields, one of them increases your crit chance. But the shield that I always picked was the one that gave me more health.
Yep.
That was so overwhelmingly positive that anything else was pretty much not worth the effort. And I did experiment with the different shields and the different swords, and especially the sword that you get, spoiler, at the very end of the game. I went back and was playing around with that to see if it functioned in the way that it was described, and it did not exactly. So I did want to talk about that for a second, too. At the end of the game, and again, this is a big spoiler, but you get a sword.
It's a big spoiler. Let people hit the stop button. Give them a beat.
Hit skip.
All right.
That's enough. All right. So you get a sword. This sword says that it does a single damage. It's 1/1 is your damage, and it increases 1 with each enemy slain. What it means is it's each enemy slain by that particular weapon. So if you go into a dungeon and you carry a second weapon and you have that equipped and you're smashing monsters and intending to switch back over to this other sword, once it gains enough power, it's not going to happen. You've got to suffer through, one hit point at a time, shaving off of these monsters in order to get the two, and so on. So that's a bit of a an expectation issue on my part, rather than you know, a problem with the game. One thing that I do think is a little may require more balance would be the weapons and armor system, which I mentioned, potions as well. So there is a huge variety of items, as they say in the description for this game, but I found that I really didn't need to use hardly anything. There were a couple of potions which had effects which would last for a few different floors, and I thought, especially in the final boss fight, that would one of them in particular would prove very useful. It did not. So the effects of the regen potion, for example, it gives you 6 hit points over 3 floors, but each floor that you go down, it increases a different amount. So one floor, it could increase 1 hit point, and then the next floor, it could increase 4 hit points, or whatever way it wants to divide it up. I found that to be a little cumbersome and not very useful as far as planning goes. It is free health, but if you're just getting one, not really super helpful.
I'm really surprised to hear you quibble with that, because I know you like elements of randomness in games, mm-hmm. and that's inserting an element of randomness. And also, I've used that potion where I need some hit points and I'll go down a level and it gives me 1. And it's not like you necessarily have to stick around on that level. You can go down another level and then get your additional hit points.
That was kind of you can make it to the stairs.
And yeah. It's true. Occasionally it's rough, but often there is some strategy to employ to get yourself to that next stairway, even if you're pretty limited on hit points. So I don't know. I'm going to take issue with that. No, I enjoyed the randomness of that potion. That did not bother me. I'm surprised to hear it did you.
Yeah. Monster scale as you go down as well. So correct. If you find yourself delving too deeply too quickly, yep. It's just like NetHack or Rogue or any of those where you're going to get creamed mm-hmm. by, you know, whatever monsters exist. Later stages also have monsters that throw projectiles, and that can be its own special bummer. So there's a variety of things which are not super conducive to making that particular item set really appealing for me. But a lot of them are like really very specific game balance type things that don't really hinder the enjoyment of the game, but they do feel like there's a lot of content that's here that was, you know, had a lot of time invested into creating it, but I don't feel like it is something that I want to engage with, if that makes sense. So changing my loadouts beyond a certain point just doesn't make sense, as I was mentioning. Really experimenting with different effects doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The thing that I found that I used the least and constantly forgot the mechanics of was popping into my hat. So I rarely would go across a little chasm until later in the game. And I continuously forgot that took mana with every move. And so at one point I had to get across a very wide gap, and I made it across the gap, and I was like, all right, made it. And then I was like, oh, wait, I can't go anywhere now. The game never really backs you into a corner in that way, though. Even if you do something really stupid like Nick does, you can just jump off of a cliff and it'll take you down to the next floor. That's like all the gameplay stuff that I've ran into in my brief time with the game, and I would like to spend some more time with the game as well. The other side, I guess. I don't know.
Before you jump to the other side, I just want to ask a question because I know I'm going to forget this if you continue.
Yeah.
So you mentioned popping into your hat. I never did that. I remember that is a possibility, but I did not learn how to do that. Can you teach me how to do that? Because if it requires mana, that makes a whole lot of sense because I never knew what the heck mana was for.
Like, yeah,
it was
there,
and I never used it. No wonder, because I never popped into my hat. So right
after our last podcast, I played a couple minutes of this game and it was introduced to that mechanic, and then I set it down until I had time to devote to it. But
see,
anyway,
this is what I'm talking about, that it took me so long to like get up to speed. There was never an instruction like, hey, use the crank and crank into your hat. Or did I just miss it?
You did. Yeah. So the guy that sits in the center of town and he's like stirring a pot of soup or whatever he's doing,
he does not tell you to crank into your hat. I read all his words. Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
you didn't read those
so
ones.
Silly.
Anyway,
I swear I read everything.
You
that
crank
guy said,
backwards,
man.
And it pops yourself into your hat. You magic up into your hat. Then you travel a distance that the number of spaces traveled equal the number of mana spent. And then you crank down to lower yourself back to the
floor. Boy, that's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it is.
Did you just think there were like treasure chests and stuff, but you just couldn't get
that? Was going to be one of my questions for you guys this episode, is what the heck is with these island areas? Like, can't you get to those? I kept looking at them. I'm like, man, that chest sure looks great. I wish I could go over there.
Do you all remember the episode a very long time ago, Medial, where I completely misinterpreted all the rules of the game? I guess Ryan's getting a taste of how I feel.
Yeah,
but yeah, pressing B to hover in place or hop in place is a very mystery dungeon net hack type thing, where you burn a turn to allow the other elements of the dungeon to move for you. You can also use those in net hack or whatever to inspect walls, but we're not talking about net hack, as great a game as it is. This game, I also wanted to highlight the sound. The sound is incredible in this game. I love the soundtrack and the sound effects and the suite of different sounds which are possible in different situations. So, for example, when you start running low on health, the entire music changes. It becomes very muted. That type of thing just... makes me fall in love. I love that kind of attention to detail. It can be a lot of effort depending on how it's implemented, but it's well worth it in my opinion. I really enjoyed that. How did you all feel about sound or audio?
Honestly, I didn't notice it that much, but I didn't use the headphones. The music did get repetitive, but not grating like some games. A lot of played games, I cannot stand the sound, honestly, and this wasn't one of them. But
I
saw a lot of people mentioning how good the sound was, and it didn't do anything for me. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I really dug that muted mechanic you were talking about, though, Nick. Like when you get to some low hit points, and it sounds like you're walking through mud, or you're head is just, you know, clogged with whatever battle damage you've suffered. I thought that was really cool. But I also wanted to touch on the art briefly. I know we're getting a little long in the tooth here, so I'll try to make this quick. And everybody's talking about how great the art is in this game, and it's true. My minor quibble is that there is, like with many Playdate games, it looked like it was developed on a computer screen, not on the Playdate screen. And by that, I mean there's a lot of single pixel work here. Playdate developers, please, please, please start thinking about wider lines for the exterior of objects, thinner interior details, because when you get these very single, tiny width lines, it's so difficult to see a lot of that detail. I loved all the animation of the smoke coming up in different areas, and there was just a ton of detail to look at, but when it's on the Playdate screen, boy howdy, did it ever feel small. So I'm pleading with developers moving forward to think about line weight when it comes to developing the graphics for your games. I say this as a comics artist, we do the same thing there, and I would love to see it done more often on Playdate games.
Yeah, thanks for that perspective, Ryan, because that's something that we've talked about on the show before, but it can be pretty difficult to see some things and differentiate things. As Don was saying, differentiating items in this game in particular can be a challenge.
There were a couple times that I walked off the level. It didn't happen a whole lot, but there were a few times. And a nod to Toe Jam and Earl, you do go down to the next level. And I didn't find any instances where, like Toe Jam and Earl, you would just keep falling if there was nothing under you. So that was nice. You didn't fall down several stages. But occasionally it was hard to tell, I'm backing into a wall. Once I realized there was a B button and I wasn't using the walls to skip turns, it wasn't an issue. But before that, it happened a few.
Did you know that you lose health when you fall
off the edge? Yep. That I once that ended a game for me,
but it did for me too. Well, overall, great game. I really enjoyed it as well, and I also would highly recommend it. So, all that to say, that's three recommendations, I think, for this one. So who is next?
Looks like Johnny Darko 138 has something to say. Said this game is really great. The art style is possibly the best we've seen on the Playdate. The soundtrack is banging, and I love how the runs are just right enough to squeeze one more time in on your work break. I've got about 6 hours of playing in my copy. Love this game. Thank you, Johnny Darko 138.
Marco Hutchins, it came from our Discord, by the way. Marco Hutchins had to say, rolled credits yesterday. Final sequence was fantastic. Great final boss design and music. Reward is really sweet, Nick. Still have two slots in the equipment room left to discover, but I think the indicators only show I'm missing one. So they're trying to figure that out. And Orkin was already in the official Discord getting answers. So they are... I guess he said that the last two empty items have not been added to the game. So coming in a future update.
Okay. Well, that answered a question for me. Cool.
Speaking of Orkin.
Yeah. Orkin wrote, I bought and played this at launch, but should share my thoughts. TLDR Under the Castle is excellent and one of my favorite Playdate games. The art has already been mentioned and deservedly so. It's a very good looking game and no surprise that one of the devs is an artist first and foremost. It's got a very clean and readable look yet still appears detailed in full. Not an easy achievement in one bit. I found it to be relatively easy, but with enough variety and moment-to-moment decisions to not be boring or trivial. Even being confident in the success of a run, I was always engaged. My two biggest complaints are already set up to be addressed in a coming update. One is adding in the missing shield that I was not alone in spending some time searching for, and the other is fixing a frequent run-ending bug when on long, deep runs. Fortunately, it doesn't really become a problem unless you play on into post-game. Huh. Hadn't run into that one.
Mm-mm.
Just out of curiosity, speaking of post-game, how many levels in are you guys after completing it?
Just a handful.
I didn't finish it. Yeah.
You did not finish it, Don?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, you've got some more fun coming your way. In the meantime, let's hear from Jug Puncher on our Discord, who says, I really enjoy this game, but I wish I felt like I was advancing in it after each run, at least more besides the unlocked items. There's no real indication that you're getting anywhere or doing anything besides seeing a higher number on the dungeon you just beat, and it would have been neat to see other changes in your home base. Where are all those people you save? Still, a whole lot of fun playing around with the unlockables, and yeah, maybe the best looking game on the system.
I really felt that. It when I got to like level 14 out of 15 or whatever, and then I died, and I got back there, and he's like, oh, I saved you, but I didn't save any of your stuff. And I was like, I've had a badass shield the last like five levels or whatever. And yeah, if there was something like, oh, you got 10 coins or something, and there was a vending machine at your home base or something where you could buy something. This, I don't know, Space Rat Miner has something like that. Like, I need that rogue light element that give you that little serotonin when you get back there. I don't know. And then Dino wrote in, yeah, I get what you're saying. Oh, that was, I expected to move around a larger map. I was surprised when I realized it was all centered on that one screen. Yeah, most of it, there's a hub world, and the hub world is mostly just one screen. I'm not sure the repetition distracted me too much from the game. It was just unexpected. Some other thoughts. I thought the quest design was great for short pickup and play sessions. The three styles of quests offer some variety, but feels slightly unbalanced. Killing monsters in the crypt is a lesser challenge than gathering orbs or saving villagers. Learning to bounce around the playfield, evading enemies while effectively managing the limited inventory slots is fun. The game's artwork is creative and detailed, and its audio is rich and nostalgic. It's super slick, polished production. I'm not sure if it's exactly my bag, but I have enjoyed playing along. It's clear that there'll be a significant audience who will dig this title. Mm-hmm.
Good words.
Thank you guys
Dino,
for sharing your
always.
Thoughts on the Discord. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Thanks for playing along.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, great pick, Nick. Good job this week. And I guess that means we should look forward to next episode's pick, which is from moi. This one's called Waterflow. So head over to catalog, get it on sale for the next 36 hours, and play along with us. And we'll chat about it next episode.
Currently, it's $1 on catalog. Can't beat that.
Pick up a copy.
Yeah, here looks like Pipe Dreams.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. All right. So that was the mystery pick of mine from the catalog sale. I've been playing that a bit over the past 24 hours or so and really enjoying my time on it. So let's give it a whirl together.
Cool. I don't recognize any of the names on the scoreboard here. I do like that Jay Plummer is on there on Waterflow. Plummer?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
All right, Dad, roll the credits.
All right. Yeah, you can. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. And you can catch us on playdatepodcast.com. And we're always active in the Discords. We're also active on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky.
Yeah.
That sounds right. Anyway. Yeah. Catch you guys later. Check out the show notes.
All right. Sounds
XOXO.
Good. XOXO. Good chatting with you this week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Au revoir.